My guest Paul Feig created the short-lived but hilarious TV series Freaks and Geeks, which chronicled the many embarrassments in the lives of several unpopular kids in a Michigan high school. Feig shared many of the embarrassments from his own early geekhood in his memoir Kick Me. Sadly, his awkwardness did not end with adolescence. His new memoir picks up where the first left off. It's called Superstud, or How I Became a 24-Year-Old Virgin. Here's a short reading.
When I'd see a prim and pretty young woman at the drugstore who was pregnant, I would be unable to fathom the idea that she had actually had sex with her husband. I could only imagine that if they did, it was in the most formal of ways, that they had both faced it as something that had to be done in order to carry on the family name, and so it was performed mechanically and impersonally, allowing all involved to retain their dignity and make sure the woman would not be sullied by what I knew had to be a messy and inherently degrading act. How else could she now be walking around dressed conservatively in a neatly ironed blouse with flowered barrettes and her perfectly combed hair while letting the world see that she was with child? How could she say hello to the older cashier who smiled sweetly and asked when she was due if she wasn't ashamed of the fact that her round belly was informing all who saw her that she engaged in sexual intercourse? How could she head into the crowded parking lot and show her fellow shoppers that she had given in to what I knew had to be the basest of animalistic instincts unless she and everyone around her knew that she had done it in the most innocent way possible? And how could I even begin to grapple with the idea that everyone I'd ever met in my life who had children, my parents, my friends' parents, the people at church, my teachers, the den mothers in my Cub Scout chapter, even our school's playground ladies, had at one time or another had sex, and that more likely they had all had sex on a regular basis?
That's Paul Feig reading from his new memoir, Superstud, or How I Became a 24-Year-Old Virgin. Paul, you say that, you know, your brain and your religion told you that sex was a terrible thing. What did your religion have to say about it?
Well, I was brought up as a Christian Scientist, and which in its essence, I guess, is kind of a new age religion, an old new age religion that I don't practice anymore. But one of the main kind of tenets behind it is that you're not supposed to give any power to the physical realm, and that in that way, then you can sort of heal yourself or overcome disease by not dwelling in the physical, you know, the physical body. And so because of that, clearly, you know, sex is one of those things that you're not supposed to let rule your world. When I was in Sunday school, I remember there was a pamphlet on a table that I saw every Sunday for my entire childhood that said chastity, the premarital standard. And so it was like, okay, well, so we're not really supposed to have sex. We're not supposed to think about it because that's giving into it. And all that really wrapped up into, A, excusing me from having to kind of mature sexually and to grapple with it, and B, to be a total geek when it came to thinking about it.
Now, you say your brain also told you sex was a terrible thing. What was your brain telling you?
My brain was working from a large dose of fear, I think, because I was terrified of, when I was in gym class, having to get undressed in front of other guys, you know, and just into my underwear to put on my gym shorts, although then the whole showering thing came in later was absolutely terrifying. But I was just completely afraid of exposing myself that way to anybody, just physically. And so then the idea of thinking that then you were going to make the leap to not only disrobing, but then interacting with another person's body in the most intimate way possible, short of surgery, and so kind of what I just could not get my head around it. And so between my fearful brain and my religious voice inside my head, it was not a recipe for catting around, as they might say.
Well, you were warned, and you felt that you know, sexual relations before marriage was a very bad thing. You were also warned about masturbation and about all the evils of that. And you even heard on the radio that you'd lose a day of your life for each time that you did it. So, which didn't stop you, but what did it do in terms of making you feel bad about it or guilty about yourself?
Well, that's the part that gets me crazy, because my misinterpretation, a lot of it was my own personal misinterpretation of the way that I chose to see the rules of my religion and then the rules of morality from the outside. Like you say, when I was in Jamaica with my parents when I was a kid on a vacation, we heard this DJ say that you lost a day off your life for every time you masturbated. That went into my brain like the main tenet of my youth, basically. And so it was horrifying, but the drive and the urge was so strong, I literally started kind of doing this bartering with myself. I'm like, okay, well, all right, if I live, I'm supposed to live till I'm 90, so okay, so I can probably lose the last 5 years of my life because I'll probably be senile, and so it's sort of like this kind of altruistic preemptive euthanasia I was going to do on myself, you know. But then suddenly you start to go like, wait a minute, what if I'm only supposed to live till I'm 25? And okay, I've already lopped off 6 years, and oh my God, the next time could be the one. And I'm just going to drop dead. And so this was something that really followed me, not just through my childhood, but like anything you learn as a kid, it gets ingrained in your head. And if it's an unprovable rule, I can't personally prove that you don't lose a day of your life every time you masturbate. Maybe you do. I don't know. It went into my head, and I could not get it out of my – it just became programmed in me. I mean, I'm talking about through college. You know, even when I was like, oh, that's ridiculous, and I kind of tossed it off, it's just something that those rules that you learn as a kid, they creep in the back of your head. This is wrong, and also there's going to be a real consequence for you doing this.
To fully appreciate your story, I think one would need to see the cover of your memoir, Super Stud, which has you have these wonderful pictures of your life. Your first memoir had a great picture. This one is a terrific follow-up. It's you in a white, like post-John Travolta Saturday Night Fever suit with a large green, like pale green bow tie, the size of those like tuxedo bow ties, those super-sized ones. Actually, this probably is a white tuxedo now that I look more closely.
No, this was my, as you say, Saturday Night Fever / Steve Martin suit. It served two roles. I could both boogie down in this and also recite all of Steve Martin's first album to it. This picture is from, I was in dance class for most of my childhood. I took tap dancing. At first I took ballet at the local YMCA when I was very small. And then once that secret got out into the school, I promptly stopped doing that. But then decided I wanted to be Gene Kelly and asked my mother to take me to a tap dancing class. And I got enrolled in this tap dancing class. And I was in it for 6 years. I was the only boy in the class. And in the entire 6 years I was in the class, I never said one word to the other girls in the class. And they never said one word to me. I was kind of this 600-pound geeky elephant in the middle of the room. And in all the 6 years, I never learned a time step. It was the biggest ripoff ever. They never taught me how to tap dance. They taught me how to do jazz with tap shoes on. And any dancers out there, all I learned how to do was flap, ball, change. So the cover of this book is actually from one of my dance recitals. I took my Steve Martin / John Travolta suit, and they gave me a spicy green tuxedo shirt with ruffles and the big tie. And if you look closer, you can see the taps on my shoes.
Oh, my gosh, there they are.
See? lest you not believe me.
Well, I'm encouraged to hear that this was actually a costume. I thought this was a prom picture.
You know, me and my imaginary date. Well, the sad thing is I wish I could say it was a costume, but then I did proudly wear this outfit around quite a bit. The sans the tap shoes, because I was also into roller skating, and so I would wear my recital outfits to roller skate on Saturday mornings. And I don't know why girls wouldn't skate with me. It's hard to say. With tassels.
What was it like to be like the straight boy in ballet and tap class?
It was – I didn't have any kind of take on it because I wasn't in sports. I did one terrible summer in Little League, but that was kind of in the middle of it all. So to me it was just kind of this what's possibly wrong with this? I want to learn how to dance. There's everyone in my class is a girl, but – it didn't seem like an unnatural thing to me until people found out, and then suddenly I started getting beaten up every day for it. And then you go, oh, I see. I guess I'm not supposed to let people know. But I still couldn't get it through my head because I go, look at Gene Kelly dances, and look how cool he is, and Donald O'Connor dances, and he's hilarious, and Fred Astaire is really cool and suave. And then you had the Nicholas brothers who were these just physical, amazing dancers who could do all these things. And I was like, well, how could people not think that's the coolest thing in the world? And quickly found out apparently they did not think it was the coolest thing in the world.
Because you're most famous for Freaks and Geeks and for your memoirs about being a nerdy kid, It's kind of a surprise that the movie that you did last year really has nothing to do with that kind of life at all. The movie was called I Am David, and it's based on a novel about a Bulgarian boy who escapes a Stalinist labor camp in the early 50s. So I'm wondering why you gravitated to that subject.
It's funny. At first glance, it does seem like a complete departure, and yet I always have felt like an outsider, like I think most of us in life do feel. And all the stories I tend to gravitate towards, be it Freaks and Geeks or I Am David, are about outsiders. And to me, I Am David is about this kid who has grown up in this communist labor camp and nobody knows who he is. And then he has to escape and kind of work his way through, get across Europe to try to find his home. And nobody knows him. To me, it was almost like the ultimate outsider story. A friend of mine always makes fun of it, though. He says, basically, all you did is turn high school into the worst communist labor camp you could find. It's like, I guess in a way you're right.
Jim Caviezel was in I Am David, and after making your movie, he made Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. What was it like seeing him as Christ and seeing all the controversy around his portrayal of Christ?
It was weird. I mean, when he first showed up on the set, he pulled me aside and he said, hey, I got to tell you a secret. I'm going to be playing Jesus Christ in this Mel Gibson movie. I was like, wow, really? And he said, yeah. He said, when Mel told me, he basically pulled me in and said, hey, Jim, you ready to ruin your career? And I was like, oh, God, and you're about to do my movie. But, you know, it turned out to be a wonderful thing for him. It was odd. I mean, Jim's a great guy. I mean, he was so much fun to work with because he's got such a great attitude towards what he does. But then it's very weird to see that come out, especially after, you know, the frustration of having finished our movie way before that, and since our distribution was all a mess, we didn't come out till after it. So that feeling of, like, people are going to go, oh, well, clearly Feig tries to cash in on the Jesus thing, which Lionsgate, who put the movie out, didn't help with, because the poster is Jim Caviezel's face is tall as a building, and then the little kid who's actually the star of the movie is kind of looking out from behind Jim's face, which I know Jim was really upset about that poster, and as was I. But the weird thing was that actually five actors from my movie ended up in Passion of the Christ, because I had the same Italian casting director that Mel Gibson had.
Oh.
And so we found all these kind of great people, and then when he went to do the movie, she was like, oh, hey, we have all these great people we just found, including the guy that played Pontius Pilate was a guy we found in Bulgaria. He was a Bulgarian actor that we found who had been doing these kind of crummy, you know, cable movies. And, you know, all of a sudden he's a big shot. So my movie came out and all these reviews are like, oh, well, you know, Feig raids Mel Gibson's cast. It's like, he took my cast.
That's funny. So what are you working on now?
Going to be directing a movie called Stargirl, which is this movie I'm going to do for Nickelodeon and Paramount, which it's another book that I adapted. And it's just a fantastic story. It's a fairly popular young adult book from like 2000, the year 2000, about it's high school again. I don't know why I keep ending up in high school. It's just, for me, something about the high school and teenage years are so great, because people are still out of their minds at that point, and it's still okay to be completely over-emotional and crazy and overreacting to everything. And I just find that funny. When I write that way, you know, about somebody in their 20s or 30s, people go, yeah, why can't that guy get it together? What's wrong with him?
What were the movies or TV shows about high school that made the biggest impression on you when you were in high school?
Ironically, I didn't like any of the ones. I mean, I know people like Square Pegs. I never really watched that. It was more for me that I rebelled all the time against all the entertainment, because it was always either too sugary sweet, like, you know, I loved the Brady Bunch, but at the same time I realized that wasn't real life. Or it was, you know, these kind of cheerleader movies that were always out, that, you know, when my friends and I would go to the drive-in, there would always be previews for these kind of tough cheerleader movies, and it made high school look like this, you know, rumble, and girls were having sex with guys all the time. So, because there weren't, as far as I remember, other than like The White Shadow, which I really liked, but that was like an inner city school, so I'm in the suburbs, so I couldn't quite relate to that. I didn't have any take on it. The shows that more influenced me, I hate to say, were things like Leave It to Beaver and old films like The Little Rascals, because what I liked about those, even though Leave It to Beaver is very corny and sort of that Brady Bunch way, the way that the kids act in those old things, they act like kids. They don't talk like adults. And that's always been my problem with all anything that is that stars kids. It's just all these guys in their 30s and 40s writing lines for kids that a 30 and 40-year-old guy would say that a kid would never say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's always kind of my goal, is to try to get real performances out of kids. Because, you know, it's all that older guys trying to right the wrongs of, you know, when I was a kid, I got beat up. So now I'm going to have this kid be he's wisecracking, and he really sticks it to those bullies with some erudite joke. Right, exactly. And on the show, it's always like the bully's like, hey, how dare you, and runs away. And in real life, you know, you just get socked and beat up even worse if you one-upped them.
Well, Paul Feig, great to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
Oh, Terry, thanks so much. It's a real pleasure.
Paul Feig, his new memoir is called Super Stud.